is Paul Kangas, and this is the program Reality Sandwich, coming to you from San Francisco, the continuing investigation into the assassinations of Dr. King, President John Kennedy, and others. Over the years doing this program, I've called for any musicians or poets that have new songs. The first song you heard, Lee Harvey Oswald Was a Friend of Mine, was a song that was produced on the East Coast. So this program is now bi-coastal. And thank you to the Boston, the Massachusetts musicians that produced that song. I'll play the song in totally and give credit in the middle of the program. Meanwhile, I wanted to point out the reason that song happened is because, thanks to Oliver Stone, the Emo Zola of our time, a tremendous wave of creativity has swept the country now. All of a sudden, people are waking up to the facts of the Kennedy assassination. So, let me talk to you for a moment about some of the new facts that have been discovered on the Kennedy assassination. Think about this, the role of the U.S. Army in the assassination of John Kennedy. And in the last week, I've been doing research on it, and I've found a tremendous amount of information. I'll only go into 3 points right now, because some of the information is hot. That is, the Army could cover it up if we talk about it, and so we're not going to talk about it until we get the actual documents in our hands. But think about this. The week before John Kennedy was assassinated, think about the month before, think about the year. In 1962, March of 1962, John Kennedy ordered 52 U.S. military bases closed worldwide. I repeat, Kennedy ordered the closure of 52 military bases worldwide as surplus, unnecessary in a time of peace, which he basically had arranged with Khrushchev at the time. Can you imagine what the military did? They went absolutely ballistic when Kennedy ordered the closure of the military bases. And that should be added as one more reason why the military-industrial complex that General and President Eisenhower warned us against. The military-industrial complex has taken over this country. Now, in 1994, we are controlled basically by the military. You have to walk very softly in this country because the military still controls the media in this country. And, okay, Kennedy orders the bases closed. Then the Army declares war against Kennedy. In fact, the Army declared that Kennedy was a communist at this point and was selling the U.S. down the river. In fact, it went so far, the Pentagon had become so blatant about its plans to kill the president that on October 8, 1963, an article in the New York Times reported that there's a contest going on between the Pentagon and the CIA to see who can kill Kennedy first. Now, that isn't exactly what they said. Actually, it was something like that if the president is killed, it will be the CIA who kills the president and not the Pentagon. If you would like a free copy of that article out of the New York Times, the author, by the way, was Arthur Kroc, K-R-O-C-K. It's a real article. If you'd like a copy of it, please send me a self-addressed stamped envelope to Paul Kangas, P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco, 94142. And I'll send you a copy of the article. That's P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco. Zip code is 94142. I'm listed in the San Francisco phone book with that address, so you can look me up just by calling information in San Francisco. Now, the next point of the Army's role. 1 week before the assassination of President John Kennedy, the Pentagon ordered a special operation. I'm not sure the name of it yet. I think it was something like Operation Camelot. I'm doing research on this, in which one-third of all the U.S. combat troops in Germany were ordered, returned from Germany to the United States to prepare for riot duty should the public discover that the military had killed the president. I repeat, the U.S. Army ordered fully one-third of all of its combat-ready troops back from Germany into the United States to prepare for riot duty in case the population of the United States discovered that the military had killed the president. So, November 21st, the planes were flying from Germany to the United States with a tremendous amount, thousands, tens of thousands of combat troops. By the way, if there's anybody out there listening that was a member of one of these Army combat units that came to the United States on November 21st, 1963, in order to prepare for putting down riots and revolts in the country when the assassins of Kennedy were discovered as being military people, please give me a call at 415-897-0153. Or you can write to me an anonymous note. But if you would like to be interviewed on this program, I would appreciate your helping to expose the U.S. role of the U.S. Army in the assassination of President Kennedy. And if you want to write to me anonymously, I'll be glad to read any letter describing it. Again, my address is P.O. Box 422644. Now comes from the heavy part. On the day President John Kennedy was assassinated, there were U.S. Army aircraft circling New York, Chicago, San Francisco, Los Angeles, 10 American cities, had thousands of U.S. troops circling over the cities, waiting for the news from Dallas as to whether or not, one, the president had been killed, and two, whether or not the CIA and Army intelligence assassins had got away with it, and three, whether or not there was a need to put down riots in the cities. Now, a fourth point. If you were going to kill the President of the United States, wouldn't you want to get the best shots in the world? I would. So where would you find the best shots in the world? Think for a minute. Why, it's the U.S. Olympic team. Who's on the U.S. Olympic team? If you check into it, it turns out it's almost all Army personnel. And where are they trained? At Fort Perry. And what is the civilian institution that supports the U.S. Olympic team? It's the National Rifle Association. You can see the right-wing elements in our society have founded these institutions in order to maintain control. And one of the elements of control of any society is the gun. So you have to have the right wing being the crack shots. So they simply brought people training for the U.S. Olympic rifle team to Dallas and used them to kill the president. In fact, in 1963, the man who won the gold medal at the Olympics for the rifle team was a man named Hammer. He was quoted in the New York Times the week after the assassination of President Kennedy that what the government was claiming about one person shooting like that was impossible. Now, there's an expert who, in a court of law, would be called upon to testify. He's an expert. In fact, he was the best shot in the world. And he claims that could not have happened. So I think we should take his word rather than the former head of the CIA, Dulles, who Kennedy had fired, who said that Oswald did it. Dulles lied, and the whole Warren Commission lied. Well, we know that. Now we have to figure out exactly who did it and why. Now let's take a close look at the history of Army intelligence in the United States and the FBI and the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. If you heard this program last week, you know that we've now discovered U.S. Army intelligence files indicating that the Army had been following the King family for 75 years. For 75 years! So when Dr. Martin Luther King was born, he already had a rap sheet. He was born. under surveillance. In fact, his mother and father were being surveilled. So that may not come as too much of a shock to people when they discover that not only was Martin Luther King assassinated by the U.S. Army, but his mother was assassinated in one of those so-called lone assassinations. But we now have U.S. Army files, which we can prove upside down and backwards in any court, that 8 to 12 U.S. Army Green Beret, Vietnam-trained snipers were following King for months, trying to get a shot at him, a clear shot. And the first clear shot they had at him, where they thought they could pull off the killing and get away with it, where they had a patsy set up. And matter of fact, we have to examine the history of James Earl Ray, who came out of prison and then followed King around the country with the Army intelligence people who were trying to kill King. And so Ray was the standby patsy who followed around along with the Army, waiting for the Army to kill King so Ray could then take the rap. We're getting closer to understanding the truth of the assassinations. By the way, if anybody would like a copy of this article on out of the Memphis newspaper, this is a regular newspaper in Memphis. The reporter Steve Tompkins accidentally discovered these U.S. Army intelligence files. If anybody would like a free copy of this article on the role of the U.S. Army in the killing of Dr. Martin Luther King, please send a self-addressed stamped envelope to me, Paul Kangas, at P.O. Box 422644. Now it's time for some music. So if you're interested in music, and by the way, if there's any musicians out there that have any original works dealing with the assassination of Dr. King, Robert Kennedy, Malcolm X, President Kennedy, or Dorothy Kilgallen, especially Dorothy Kilgallen, please, or even better, a song that combines an analysis of all these, and throw in one on the shooting of George Wallace, too, now that we found Nixon's Watergate tapes showing that Nixon set up the shooting of not only King and Kennedy, but also George Wallace. If there's any musicians out there that have songs dealing with any of these topics, I would really appreciate a chance to play them over the air, give you credit, and I'll even list an address if you want where people can contact you to buy a copy of your song. But if you want to hear this song, Lee Harvey was a friend of mine. Here it comes. Turn on the tape recorders. And by the way, for the folks out there in Radio Land that have been taping my program and mailing it around the country to various people, I really appreciate that. I've gotten letters from about 30 states nationwide now from people that have been mailing out the tapes, and the feedback is tremendous. I love it. Here comes the song.
Lee Harvey was a friend of mine. I was born in Dallas in 1952. Lee Harvey moved across the street on Beckley Avenue. He used to throw the ball to me when I was just a kid. They say
Harvey got gunned down. Murdered by Jack Ruby, the biggest sleaze in town. He stuck that gun into his ribs and said, "Here's looking at you, kid." Ruby killed Lee Harvey, TB proof he did.
And Lee Harvey was a friend of mine.
A very good friend. I don't think he did.
JFK, blown away. What else do I have to say?
That's not what you can do for your country. What's your country been doing to you?
The following is an article from the Nevada City newspaper entitled Community Endeavor. And the headline on it is How Lee Harvey Oswald Saved the Life of President John Kennedy. Now that George Bush is out of the White House, the truth can be told about the most famous unsolved murder in history. Our story opens late on a muggy afternoon in New Orleans. Most famous figure, Lee Harvey Oswald, sat in his office at 544 Camp Street. Oswald was waiting for a meeting with David Ferry, Clay Shaw, E. Howard Hunt, and Frank Sturgis. It was an early August day in 1963. That was Hunt's alternative office during the Bay of Pigs operations. Lee was nervous. The FBI had just arrested half the office associates at their CIA training camp at Lake Pontchartrain. Hunt and Sturgis were driving up from the CIA's main U.S. office in Miami, Florida, to assess the damage and reorganize the New Orleans unit. A new CIA officer had just been put in charge of the Miami office. His name was George Bush, after President Kennedy had fired some of the top leadership of the CIA after the Bay of Pigs losses. Lee knew that E. Howard Hunt would be angry about Kennedy ordering the FBI to arrest the CIA agents at Lake Pontchartrain, and Lee was worried that the FBI might come to this office also during the meeting. That could be a problem, since Lee was working for the FBI to spy on what the CIA was doing around Cuba. In fact, Lee had been the person who had tipped off Robert Kennedy as to what the CIA was doing at Lake Pontchartrain. Would Hunt suspect it had to have been someone inside who tipped off Robert Kennedy? Did Hunt or Bush now know it was Lee who had made the call? But Lee finally decided, even if they confront him, he knew they probably couldn't prove it, so he would just deny everything. Well, Hunt and Sturgis finally arrived at the office in New Orleans on 544 Camp Street. The meeting went off without any disruptions. Hunt had run the meeting while Sturgis sat around cursing Kennedy. Hunt had given Lee new orders to meet a new agent in Dallas, Texas. He said there was a new strategy on how to get the CIA back on track towards Cuba as soon as that bastard Kennedy was gone. Bush had a close oil company associate in Dallas named George D. Mornshield, who Lee was being sent to work with on this new level of the next strategy. In a few weeks, Lee drove to Dallas, where he began working with D. Mornshield. Lee was in constant contact with Hunt and even met with George Bush when Bush came to Dallas for a meeting with Clint Murchison Jr. and D. Mornshield at the Clint Murchison Mansion. Hunt kept Lee busy doing small things. Lee followed orders well. He knew his main job was to perform well so that he was kept in the loop so he could keep an eye on Bush and Hunt. Hunt kept Lee aware of the weekly calendar of Kennedy's movement. Lee kept Hunt aware of the work going on in Dallas of Sheriff Curry and Mayor Cabell that were doing in planning the motorcade route for JFK through Dallas. Lee also was keeping in constant contact with FBI agent, Special Agent Hotze, keeping the FBI briefed as to what Hunt, Bush, and the Cubans were doing in Dallas, New Orleans, and Miami. Lee had a subscription to the New York Times. In the October 1963 issue, he read a story indicating, quote, if there was a coup in the United States, it would be done by the CIA and not the Pentagon. Lee suspected the story was the result of a leak from the FBI. The story worried him. Could the story have come from the FBI to alert the CIA? Were his calls to Robert Kennedy being tapped? After the story in the New York Times appeared, the lines of communication seemed to break down. Suddenly, Lee noticed Hunt and Sturgis were not returning his calls. Lee suspected something was up. He was determined not to be cut out of the loop. It could cost him his job or his life. This upset Lee, so he wrote a letter from his new post in Dallas to E. Howard Hunt at 544 Camp Street in New Orleans. On November 8, 1963, Lee wrote the following letter to E. Howard Hunt. Dear Mr. Hunt, I would like information concerning my position. I am asking only for information. I am suggesting that we discuss this matter fully before any steps are taken by me or anyone else. Thank you, Lee Harvey Oswald. Hunt called Lee and told him that all plans were go. We're going to get Kennedy in Dallas when he comes November 22nd. Lee was nervous. This was it. Would his cover be blown if he told the FBI about this too? It was his job. He knew he had to talk to Special FBI Agent Jim Hotze. Lee went to the Dallas FBI office and spoke with Hotze November 16th and gave him a note. The note detailed what Hunt had told him was the new plan to kill JFK in Dallas November 22nd. Hotze sent a telex to Hoover in Washington, D.C. However, both Hoover and his lover, Clyde Tolson, were on their way to Dallas for a meeting with Murchison, LBJ, and Bush. So the second in command at the FBI office in Washington, D.C., took matters into his own hands. He sent a telex out alerting every FBI agent in the U.S. with the following message. Urgent, 1:45 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 11/17/1963, to all SACs, from the director, threat to assassinate President Kennedy in Dallas, Texas, November 22, 1963. All receiving offices should contact all hate group informants and determine if any basis for threat. And acknowledge, please. However, Hoover got wind of the telex and ordered it withdrawn immediately. Hoover went back to his meeting in Dallas, Texas with Nixon, Joan Crawford, and George Bush. And I continue reading from this article out of the Nevada City, California newspaper entitled The Community Endeavor. Well, there you have it. Lee Harvey Oswald actually tried to save the life of President John Kennedy. He even got the message out to the whole FBI, but he and the whole nation were naive. We didn't realize it was controlled by the military-industrial complex and the CIA. Notice I stopped before JFK was shot four times and Connolly was shot five times. It didn't have to happen. What if Kennedy had lived? Is it too late to arrest Bush and Nixon for their role in the JFK assassination? Oswald knew too damn much. That is the reason the CIA could not allow Lee Harvey Oswald to stand trial. He would have talked and blown the whole story. We now know that Lee Harvey Oswald was an FBI agent. We have his pay stubs number even. We can prove it. Hunt, Sturgis, Nixon, and Bush could have ended up in jail in 1963 for the murder of President Kennedy. The war in Vietnam might never have happened if Kennedy had lived. 2 million Vietnamese children, women, and men might not have died, nor would have 50,000 American young people needed to have lost their lives. the cover-up had to begin. So it became necessary for an employee of Nixon's, named Jack Ruby, to kill Lee Harvey Oswald. And then the killing couldn't stop there. Now all the eyewitnesses had to shut up or die. Jean Hill was smart. She shut up until 1988. She was one of the few who survived. Does history repeat itself? Will Clinton be bold enough to do what is necessary to save our economy? Will he try to cancel the national debt like JFK tried to do when he issued Executive Order 11,110, which issued a new type of U.S. money? Okay, that's the story. If you would like a copy of this story out of the Nevada City newspaper, please send a write to me, Paul Kangas at P.O. Box 422644, San Francisco, California, 94142. And it's been enjoyable talking. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you. And now for some music.
They'll like the CIA, they killed John Kennedy.
Fucking CIA man.
Lee Harvey was a friend of mine. I was born in Dallas in 1952. Lee Harvey moved across the street on Beckley Avenue. He used to throw the ball to me when I was just a kid. They say that gun into his ribs and said, here's where